What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And last night, the Lakers made it halfway through their road trip, moving to 3-1 with a very fun win in Chicago, exercising some demons from their trip there last year. D, I try not to think about it, but I couldn't help it when they showed up in Chicago. First time I saw Josh Giddey, I kind of, shoot, every time I see Maxi Kleber even, like, I still have a little, guys who hit game winners against us, they hurt.
And Giddey throwing in a three-quarter court shot.
Oh, that's right. After the...
before time, right? I was just like, oh, the Lakers were up at that time. But it was a little reminder of our little ghost of Christmas past or whatever. Anyways.
That's right. Luka had one of those games where you're like, I cannot believe this guy's on my team. When he's
exercised some demons. Yeah. He was just like, oh, the demons? Yeah, we're getting rid of those dudes today.
Man, when his three ball is going, this might be the stretch right after he had such a struggle in December, really over a month plus or so as a three-point shooter. This might be his best stretch of three-point shooting as a Laker over these last few. And when his three ball is going, you just see the levels of unguardability that he is, because you really have to guard every single thing that he does, which is impossible to do for an offensive player. So Luka just absolutely dominated that game. Rui was on fire, goes 9 of 11 off of the bench. The first time this season that he's gotten 10-plus shots in five straight games. Vando is in a great rhythm as well. You look at the plus-minuses of the guys off of the bench. You could see really where and when the team excelled. DeAndre Ayton got pulled pretty early in the second half and struggled again. We're going to talk about him a little bit later. But overall, that to me was a very, very fun night. What do you take away from yesterday's game?
Super fun Luka game. Him cracking jokes after about his shot attempts, say that JJ might get mad at him for taking so many shots because of the little discussion that stemmed out of the Reddit comments about trusting the pass and sort of the players maybe feeling a little bit anxious about shot attempts and pending free agencies and player options and whatnot. JJ made those comments, which I thought were probably pretty accurate and pretty insightful and like not the sort of thing you often hear a coach say, but the human element stuff are things that we talk about a fair amount.
And this should be something that Redick is good at. He's got such a relationship with both LeBron and Luka that this should be an advantage. This isn't just some coach from some that's got great X's and O's, but doesn't know them as people. He knows these guys. You got to be able to be honest with your friends, right?
And Rui saying afterwards that it's just like, yeah, there were discussions with Luka and LeBron, and the bad vibes that were sort of seemingly circulating around the team. You talk about exercising demons from the Chicago loss last year where Giddey hits that game winner. Some of this was exercising some demons around the team as well. You know, we got to course correct some of the vibes. Remember early in the season, the vibes were so strong around the team. And like that was one of the hallmarks of just the feel good nature of what was happening. Last night, I thought Luka, but also LeBron, Luka did it with just a superior level of skill and shot making and passing talent. I want to linger on him for a second, but I also just wanted to comment that I thought LeBron's general energy and the pep in his step was how he led. So with your two best players, Luka dominating from a skill perspective and LeBron just sort of flying around the court and just looking like a very engaged, great athlete out there. And again, as a 41-year-old, it's crazy to talk about him that way. I just thought the leaders were fantastic. And so just Luka's stat line, Pete, 38 minutes, 46 points, 15 for 25 from the field, 8 for 14 from behind the arc, 8 for 12 from the free throw line, 12 assists, 7 rebounds, just 3 turnovers. Truly a masterful night. You talked about his three-point shooting. Now, that's buoyed by an 8-for-14 night, but in January, he's 38.6% from behind the arc on 9.8 attempts a game, and that's up almost 10 full percentage points from December, Pete, where he was 28.9% on 10 attempts a game even. The uptick in shot-making from behind the arc when he's trying to navigate shrunk floors in some of these rotations. It's just like, you know, the Lakers have been playing Vando more. Gabe isn't being treated with the same amount of respect as he was earlier in the season when he was making more shots. Some of these groups, Luka's got to hit these shots. And in December, when they weren't falling, the Lakers offense could sputter at times. And on a night like he had against the Bulls, where he was unstoppable, really. And there's just a degree of demoralization that happens to the opponent when Luka's hitting these step back threes, or like even catching triple threat and then just like jab stepping and like hitting like a little flick shot, or driving into the lane and hitting a little runner. These are just great shots that sink you as an opponent, because even when it feels like you're playing good defense, he's beating you.
I want to talk a little bit about what he's doing before the shot to get to those looks, especially in those groups where with the shrunken floor that you were just talking about. I've been lamenting this a lot, right? It's been driving me crazy. The Luka, Vando, Jackson, right? I've been texting you the numbers on that over and over. And but I try when I have these sort of, soapboxes that I want to stand on, to still actually see what's happening rather than just what I want. And one thing that he's really done well in those groups, and it's on both ends of the floor, is the pace with those groups have gone way up, way up. Like, if you've got a bunch of skill guys on the floor, you can kind of move around the chess pieces, right? And be like, okay, we're going to have Jackson or DA, finishers, Rui over here, Austin over there, LeBron, right? You can be a little bit slower and more deliberate, because if you set things up just right, you do this plus that, you're going to get the bucket. If you continue to play that way when it's Gabe, Vando, and Jackson on the floor next to you, you're going to get a lot of late shot clock possessions. You're going to get a lot of – because there's more places to cheat off of, more places where the correct decision or pass out is this, but it's to a player that doesn't have the skill set to cash in on the catch-and-shoot three, right? It's Vando in the corner, and I know he's shooting better, or Jackson will catch it out there sometimes, right? There's all of these reasons that it's different when it's those guys rather than a Rui or Austin, et cetera. And so I see him on both ends of the floor. Like, he's really looking to turn up, forcing turnovers. Lakers are winning the transition battle. D, I almost guarantee you, if we played this game a month ago, we would be talking, Lakers aren't athletic enough. Look at those young athletic Bulls. Have won four in a row, been the number one offense in the NBA for the last couple of weeks, just killing teams. And Lord knows they were bombing threes on us. They had like 16 threes with 9 minutes left in the third quarter. It was unbelievable. But the Lakers actually won the transition battle. And so there's an element of pace. And a big part of that, I think, is Luka leading the way.
I'm so glad you brought up the pace. It's noticeable how much faster he's trying to get the ball up court. You talked about the deliberate nature of what can be half-court basketball. There's also a deliberate nature of, no, I'm going to continue to press on this button every single time. And there's a commitment that comes with that. He is looking to push the pace a lot. Every time he gets a rebound, his first look is up the court. So he's looking for head-to-head passes pretty much every play. And you could tell that the demon on his shoulder sometimes is be like, throw it, throw it, throw it. And like, he's pulling the ball back. Like, no, that's actually not a good pass. That's like Gabe Vincent up there streaking ahead. I probably shouldn't throw a long ball to him. But you see him looking up. And when it's not there, he is racing the court a lot of times, just trying to get the ball into the front court, looking to initiate the action, looking to get something going early. And that is what you need to do in some of these non-spacing units. I also think, though, Pete, that the lineup stuff that we discussed yesterday and the shift of Rui to the bench is also helping Luka a fair amount in those bench groups, because when Ayton's been going to the bench early, and that brings in his lob threat with Jackson, and then LeBron is going to the bench a little bit after Ayton, and that brings in his true stretch forward. And the combination of those things with him then starting to push the pace is leading to more opportunistic chances for him to explore the openings, to get into the creases of the defense, and when the defense is on their heels, to really like start to get good open threes for himself as well. So let's go to break here, Pete. And when we come back, I want to talk about Rui, who had an amazing night. So much for the Rui struggling coming off the bench narrative. JJ talked about this some, I think, pregame and postgame, but I both think it's funny that JJ says stuff like this, and I think that it could cut both ways. But he's like, I told Rui this, so it's not like I'm saying anything out of turn. I told him he wasn't playing well before he got hurt, and then he got hurt, and then he came back, and so it's taken him a little while to find his groove, but he is back in his groove, and boy, was he back in his groove last night, Pete. You talk about the Bulls not missing. Rui was out here not missing at all. Threes, middies, pull-up jumpers. He had his whole game going offensively.
You know, when a great shooter, Steph is the embodiment of this with the I turn around midair because I know that shit's going in. Rui has a version of this where he'll let it go and then he gives like a little extra hop. A lot of great shooters do this, but he was doing that all night. Like that, you know, little hop. He was in such a great rhythm. It was just exuding from him, the confidence and the rhythm of that. And I think that should be the number one goal of really any coach. And I think this is very high up for Redick, is getting your players into that rhythm, into that feeling like they're playing their game from the spots that they want to get to, getting the amount of touches they want to get. Like I said at the top of the show, first time this season, we've got 10 plus shots from Rui in 5 straight games. And, you know, they even ran a play for him right to start the second quarter, I think it was, where just a simple and a down screen for Rui, curled off of it, hit a midi at the free throw line over Bouzelis, right? Just great to see, but also his like level of aggression. He is looking for his shot, and that's just who Rui is, right? Like the whole swing that MF thing, I get it, and LeBron's right, and especially in that situation, right? But Rui is who he is, and that is one of my main beliefs just as from a coaching standpoint, is like you've got to understand who your players are, and you can't stand for nothing, right? You have to have a backbone of your own and beliefs of your own, but getting them to do what they do, even if it's not exactly what you have envisioned for that position, is super important. And I just see him really stepping into what I think is a natural role for him.
To your point, JJ said, we're running some stuff for him. We'll run an ATO for him. And he's like, we run an ATO, we'd a lot of times prefer for it to not turn into a mid-range jumper. But he's like, that's a really good shot for Rui. And So we'll live with that because he knocks those down at such a high clip. But to your point, it's just like JJ does have his beliefs and he'd prefer not to have his guys step into 16 footers. But if this is what sort of gets your guy going, or you know that this is a shot that he can take and make, then you're going to live with that. And I think his giving back of some of that stuff to Rui, whereas last year I thought Rui was way more of a, you stand in the corner or above the break, you take spot up threes, and you cut the baseline. And if you're not doing those two things, maybe you'll get a deep post-up seal in transition or you run the break. I think he's giving Rui way more latitude this year to take different types of shots, to get into the mid-range, take these pull-up twos. And I think it suits Rui. I should also say that Rui's commitment to doing more defensively and just being more active has stood out a lot. He had that weak side block where he came late behind the play. I think he got Vooch at the basket where he was going to finish a shot at the rim and Rui came and got him. He had a couple of very similar plays over the last couple of games as well, where it's just like, he's just being more active around the rim. And it's what you need from him. You made that point yesterday about him playing in more active defensive units and Rui being a follower in that way. But in some of these possessions, he's just going to have to take initiative himself and not rely on others. And I thought I saw more of that in the Bulls game as well.
Yeah, I love that you pointed that out on the defensive end, talking about the transition the Lakers got into, because they really turned that game in their favor toward the back half of the first quarter with Rui in. And he had 3 stocks in this one little stretch. He had another block as well and had a steal. Now, they threw it right to him, and then Vando turned the ball over right after that. So it didn't turn it into anything. But he, like I said, he had 3 stocks in this little stretch right here that facilitates the transition type of play. And that first block that you were talking about, though, that he got Vooch at, where he got Vooch at the rim, part of what's exciting about that is that that was a peel-off, meaning that he read it and he left his man. Where that type of block, that blindside block from behind, you are absolutely leaving your guy open. You're just banking on the fact that Vucevic isn't going to throw a Luka pass behind his head to the open three-point shooter. And so there are actually plenty of those opportunities. It's how a guy like Derek White, for example, gets a ton of blocks as a guard. Is it's like you see this big guy down underneath. You have a chance to leave your guy and get a block from behind, but you have to read it. And that's one of my bigger complaints about Rui's game, is just being able to read the game live. And so he will sometimes get those rim protector type of blocks where he'll rotate over, and he got one last night and has had one in the last couple of games. But that particular type of block, D, I was like, oh, that's really interesting to see him doing that.
Yeah, JJ said this the other day that they were doing film work, and Greg St. Jean had a great line about trusting your help but not relying on it. And that is a fantastic framework for like keeping your defensive integrity and really understanding that everyone has to do their job on any given play. And I don't think you say a comment like that to signal out maybe a guy at the point of attack who is like getting beat off of the dribble, just like you're not doing it to single out the guy who's maybe not shifting on the back line. You're talking to everyone at the same time. And the play that you're talking about with Rui, that's trusting your help. Rui is doing the job that he's supposed to do, where in order to help the guy who's getting beat at the point of attack, and he's trusting the guy behind him that if the ball does get kicked out, someone else is going to make that rotation to help cover for him. And that idea is what's going to make the Lakers defense good. And this should be their goal, because if we talk about them being a great defense, like we're going to chuckle a little bit, because I don't think they're ever going to be a great defense, not with this personnel. What you want to be, though, is a good defense, and a defense that can tighten the screws some when required. I think we've seen that in clutch time moments, where it's just like, okay, there is a new level of intensity and focus and ability to execute. You can't expect the Lakers to play 48 minutes of crunch time defense. Like, that's not viable for this group, I don't think. I think that ask is too high and unrealistic. But what you do want is for them to start to approach those levels rather than, I don't know, man, some of the effort that they showed like in December, when it felt like, okay, you guys look like the worst defense in the league for extended stretches.
Yeah, how much of this is just spirit and the level of oomph that you bring to any particular game? Because on a lot of these games, D, whether it's at the start of the first quarter or the start of the third as they come out of halftime, I feel like I know within the first 10 seconds of the first play, just on how they're moving, their body language. It's something that you wouldn't need to even know that much about basketball to be able to see which is the team that's readier to play. And so how much of this recent stretch is them just going like, hey, we got to turn up a little bit?
I think it's a fair amount. I will also say, though, too, that the variety of different looks that the team is showing is also a way to mentally engage your players.
Right? Amen.
Because if you just continue to do the same thing over and over and over again, your brain can go into autopilot. And then if that starts to not work, your brain can go into demoralized autopilot. Right? And you start to get frustrated, and then you lose focus even more, right? And that's when things can fall off a cliff for you defensively. And I would argue that the Lakers saying, yeah, guess what? We're going to have five or six straight possessions of zone here, or we're going to play at the level. No, we're trapping. No, we're sending a second defender. No, we're back in a drop. We're at the level. And those sorts of things are, I think, meaningful. I would also say, too, that the uptick of Vando minutes, Smart continuing to play to the level that he has by playing hard. Jake LaRavia, he's a guy so that fun. I don't think we're going to talk about a ton on this pod, Pete, but I want to talk about him more soon.
Me too.
the degree to which he plays hard on every possession and is just doing his job possession after possession after possession, that's also meaningful to the continuity of your group and what you're going to do and how you're going to execute on that side of the ball.
JJ had a great quote prior to the game about him as a Laker speaking exactly to that.
Yeah, and so I think that all of that stuff matters here too, or it helps lift that spirit that we're talking about in terms of playing with that. But let's be real, man. This team isn't going to be the hyper-vigilant, defensive-focused group for 48 minutes every single night. What you want to do is get closer to that being 40 minutes or 42 minutes or you know what I mean?
Do the best you can. It's very simple. And they're so good on offense that really the number that they have to get to, because this is every team's goal, right? Nobody, very few teams get to the full 48. But if you can, and but really it's chicken or the egg type of thing, because this whole phenomenon affects their offense too.
I would say their offense also affects their defense. Let's go to break here. And when we come back, I want to relay a point that I heard another reporter talking about. I was listening to the Hoop Collective pod, and Tim McMahon was talking about this because he had mentioned that he was sort of pushed in the sideline reporter duty because of all the inclement weather that's been affecting a lot of the country. And McMahon got pulled off of his ESPN beat to do sideline reporting work for the first time in that Lakers-Mavs game. And he talked about being able to then go into the coaches' interviews like before the game and talk to the coaches and this, that, and the other. And he mentioned one of the things that JJ was talking about, and I think this goes back to the point that we were discussing earlier about Rui and Luka and passing and ball movement, is that JJ commented that some of the things that the Lakers have experienced on defense in terms of their attentiveness and everything else can come from not being as involved offensively. If you do a lot of standing and watching on offense, that can translate to standing and watching on defense. And this is, again, the human element part of this, Pete. And so I would argue that the connection between offense and defense goes both ways. It's not just like, oh, well, our defense is going to fuel our offense and we're going to be better at that. Like, no, your involvement offensively can work towards involvement defensively.
It's a flow sport. This is such a great point that when you speak about it that segmented, it's more like you're talking about football, right? Where a whole group, different group of individuals comes on to play offense and then a different group comes on to play defense and there's stopping in between. It's a great flow sport that actually just getting into that flow and that rhythm. I had a couple of chances to have conversations with Phil Handy when I worked with the Lakers and talk hoops and got to make one video with him. And that was one of the things that I picked up from him was the importance of rhythm and timing and how much he emphasized of that. Like a lot of what he would teach guys was very like one, two, pop. Like he would speak in a lot of onomatopoeia and sounds and, but things that like as you're doing it, it makes you be able to do it. It's very easy to understand if you're the person that actually has to do it. And so that I think is just such a big part of getting this team kind of activated. That's kind of what I hear from the point that you're making in a lot of ways is that there's just a level of overall activation that once you're in it, once you're in that flow, you're that on both sides of the floor.
Yes. And so I want to pivot now to talk about a guy who hasn't been quite
no
in that
flow.
Same flow.
No rhythm.
And that's DeAndre Ayton. I've been tepid in wanting to criticize Ayton too much like on the pod just because I thought that he was so good to start the season. I just honestly felt like he deserved a certain amount of grace. I've talked about in the past how I think that if there's any player who's missed Austin, that it's Ayton. They had a burgeoning pick and roll chemistry together that Luka and Ayton, I actually don't think their pick and roll styles are super conducive to each other. There is a part of the Venn diagram that does overlap and you do see them connect, but I just think Ayton is more of a pocket pass player and Luka's not really a pocket passer in general, and that he's much more of a late passer. And I don't think that Ayton has as much of a feel for that. So I've wanted to sort of be like, okay, like I understand what's going on. But Pete, the degree to which Ayton has been struggling or not playing to the same level that he was earlier this year, that slip is now so noticeable. And it's been extended for enough time now that I think it's worth having a larger discussion about his level of play, how often he is or isn't closing games, what his effort looks like defensively. Offensively, he's been just like struggling more, missing shots. He had a horrendous finishing game against the Mavs. And even yesterday, he shot 50%. This is a guy who's shot 70% for most of the season. So a 50% night isn't very good for him. And so what have you been seeing from Ayton, and where's your mindset at around him?
Yeah, he feels very disconnected in a moment where a lot of players do have a rhythm, right? Rui and Vando, Luka, LeBron is in a great rhythm. I think several players are right now. DA seems to be very much not in that place. And how he got there, I think you listed several of the factors with Austin being out and a few other things. But to me, it's the fact that both things are true. He is this guy, and he's also the guy that was the only player in NBA history to be shooting 70% from the field on 10 attempts for a stretch. Yeah. That was just absolutely automatic as a finisher. That I see him and Rui as very similar type of players, as in that they are finishers, and that is what their elite skill is at. That finishing can be something that...
It's fickle, Pete.
That finishing is fickle. Yes, finishing is fickle. And so... Being to me, between that, we're going to have some trade deadline conversations coming up soon as well, of which I know you want to talk DA in this context too, of like, shit, what do we do about this? Because that to me is the fundamental question, is that are you going to get the guy that's 70% from the field on 10 attempts a game, or the guy who Redick is pulling with 9 minutes and 54 seconds left in the third quarter and never comes back in because he's been so unreliable? What happens if that guy shows up in game four of a playoff series?
Well, I would say too, at the top of the pod, I mentioned that Ayton was going out earlier in first quarters as well. Ayton was a guy that was actually playing up until like the 8 or 9 minute mark of the first quarter as well. And this past game against the Bulls, I think he went out before LeBron.
He did. A couple guys did, actually. It was unusual. Yeah.
For me, then, the trade discussion stuff, I want to have a more thorough conversation about that, because I think there's a lot of different variables at play here. But what I will say is that in terms of trending, if you look at the way that Ayton is trending, he's trending in the wrong direction in terms of also the amount of leeway he's getting from his head coach. And so JJ is not the super reactionary type. Look how long it took him to sort of change the starting lineup. Those groups were not performing well, but the Lakers were winning enough games that JJ stuck with it. The shift that we're starting to see in the rotation, and when was the last time Ayton closed a game?
I think it was the Toronto game, which was a great example because he went like 10 of 10 from the field in that game. And so one polar opposite or the other, but I think it was that game.
Yeah, so he was awesome against the Raptors, and I think JJ is in tune enough to understand. So it's like, this guy's rolling, we're going to continue to play him throughout. But the games where the Lakers have been struggling, or even some of the games where they've come back and won, the Clippers game is a great example as well, where they were like, okay, they made this huge comeback, they didn't win, but that comeback came with Ayton on the bench. He didn't close against the Mavericks. The Lakers won that game by going small again. He didn't close last night. And more often, he's getting subbed out earlier. He's not closing games, but he's your starting center. And I get that he's got real value to the team. And I do hope and believe to a certain degree that Austin's return is going to help him. But DeAndre Ayton, who got waived and was available on the buyout market, this is sort of closer to that version of player, like why he was available in the first place, right? And so I want to look at it through clear eyes, because the first part of the season, I don't think the Lakers have the record that they have now without the version of DeAndre Ayton that was here for a good 20, 25 games easy. Right. And we're about halfway through the season now. So I would say it's been about 15-game stretch where I've really noticed, okay, like things have shifted for him some. So I want to put a pin in this conversation about Ayton because I want to come back to it. But it's worth noting that I think we're at the point now where it's just like, all right, the reserve nature of like how hard I want to go in on Ayton for how well or not he's playing. I think now the sample is getting big enough now where we have to start to have different conversations about him. Whereas earlier in the season, I was just like, well, he's been awesome. Okay, he's had a few games that he hasn't looked great. Like, whatever, he's been awesome. This stretch has lingered a little bit more. And so I think it's worth noting at least that we need to probably talk about him a little bit more.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's clear that you can't trust his game. You can't trust him to show up as the same guy from one night to the next. And he's far from the only player that fits that description league-wide, right? But that is precisely why he's playing basketball for us at $8.3 million despite his talent. And so, like I said, both of those things being true, him being both of those players in one person, I think that the biggest thing the team needs to be doing is endeavoring to get that guy back and figuring out ways to get that guy back while also understanding from a long-term perspective that that is probably not the type of player, not probably, I'll say that with my chest. You don't want that in your starting lineup. You don't want that as a major piece on your team, as somebody that I'm not sure if he's going to be here tonight or not. And so that said, getting him back short term, I think is, you know, their best bet. But a very fun game last night, D. We'll wrap up here. Going to be a lot of pods this week. We've got the trade deadline coming up in like 9 days, and we haven't talked a ton about it recently. So we're going to do a mini pod or two coming up about that. Got the pod about how we use stats coming out soon. Also, had a ton of fun last night on the offside chat. If you tried to get over there and it was a little confusing, you have to download Test Flight, the app from the App Store. You have to download the Test Flight app from the App Store. And then once you do that, click offside.gg/beta, and then you should be good to go. So join us, watch the game together, had a lot of fun. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about Austin's possible return. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn his double team. Just pass out in front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's in. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good!
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one.
Miss it.
Unbelievable.
It's over.
And shot clock now to 5. Bryant.
Yes.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.